Hello, I'm Rabbi Ed Bernstein. Welcome to the My Teacher Podcast, a celebration of the people who shape our lives. Listeners to My Teacher Podcast may know that in my day job, I serve as a chaplain in the healthcare world. Specifically, I serve as chaplain at Boca Raton Regional Hospital. But prior to my chaplain career, I served 18 years as a pulpit rabbi in conservative synagogues around the U.S. And there were certainly times during that period when I was heading into a Friday afternoon prior to Shabbat, and I was stuck not being able to think of a sermon to give on Shabbat, and I needed a spark, and I knew I could always turn to the writings of our guest today, Rabbi Jack Reamer, for a spark, some inspiration, and there have been multiple times he, through his writings, came to my rescue. And then in my last pulpit that I served at Temple Torah, now Temple Torat Emet in Boynton Beach, the Board of Rabbis would have an annual high holiday sermon seminar, and Rabbi Reamer would hold court and share what he was thinking about heading into the high holidays, and I often drew from his wisdom there as I crafted my own high holiday sermons. Rabbi Jack Reamer is a distinguished rabbi and a well-known author and speaker. He is Rabbi Emeritus of Congregation Beth Tikva, which is now Congregation Shaarei Kodesh in Boca Raton, Florida. And he also has a long, distinguished record serving conservative congregations in the United States, including a substantial tenure in Dayton, Ohio. Rabbi Reamer founded the National Rabbinic Network, a support system for rabbis across all denominational lines. He is the author, most recently, together with Rabbi Eli Spitz. The book is titled Duets of Psalms, Drawing New Meaning from Ancient Words. And we'll be talking about that shortly. But Rabbi Reamer has written extensively and published several books. He is the author of Finding God in Unexpected Places, Wisdom for Everyone from the Jewish Tradition. He wrote Jewish Reflections on Death and a very important book, So That Your Values Live On, Ethical Wills and How to Prepare Them. Rabbi Reamer is often referred to as a rabbi's rabbi among Jewish clergy because of the way in which he has taught and mentored so many of his colleagues, as I personally can relate to. And the late Nobel laureate Elie Wiesel, Alav HaShalom of blessed memory, said that Jack Reamer's words are songs of hope and faith. Listen to them as I do. Rabbi Jack Reamer, welcome to My Teacher Podcast. It is such an honor to have you today.
Thank you.
Rabbi Reamer, we are recording this right at the outset of the year 2025. It's January 5th, 2025, as we're sitting down. We are in South Florida, and we're going to talk about your most recent work, but I'd like to take a trip down memory lane a bit and hear a bit about your spiritual backstory, particularly your path to the rabbinate and key teachers along the way who guided you into the person that you became. To start at the very beginning, I believe you were born in Pittsburgh. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So can you talk about your early life, what your Jewish life was growing up in particular, and how you found your way to the rabbinate from your roots in Pittsburgh?
I came from a traditional family of three boys who followed in their parents' footsteps and maintained the Jewish life. And I went to college in the mid-40s during the tumultuous years when the state of Israel was coming into birth. And I was active in the college Zionist organization. And I think that I went to the seminary with a primary concern or focus on the Jewish people more than the Jewish faith.
So that's the Jewish Theological Seminary, the Center for Conservative Judaism.
Right. But I think I came with more of a focus on the effort to create a Jewish state. But I met there, and I was fortunate enough to be the secretary there for 4 years of the person who was surely the greatest influence on my spiritual life, Abraham Joshua Heschel, who influenced me and many others and continues to influence many others to appreciate the sense of wonder, which is at the heart of Judaism.
Can you say more about the specific lessons that come to mind from Rabbi Heschel, from his words and from his personal example that helped shape you?
There are many. It's hard to choose between them. I remember I once went to a wedding, and it was a very sad wedding. The bride had no relatives. The groom had no relatives. The bride was physically handicapped. The groom was physically handicapped. There were no relatives. They had perished in the Shoah. There was meager refreshments. And I came back and he was standing in the courtyard and he said, "Where were you? I've been looking for you." And I said, "I was at a wedding." And he said, "What kind of a wedding?" And I started to tell him, and I was about to say what a sad wedding it was when he interrupted me and said, "How wonderful." And he was right. The two such hapless people had met each other and cast their lots together was wonderful. And that's a random example of how he taught me and the generation of students and the world how to appreciate the wonder in the world.
That's a wonderful memory. Can you talk about the art of preaching? What was your background in public speaking going into the rabbinate? And how did you develop that craft over the years such that you became a rabbi's rabbi, someone people go to for inspiration?
I don't know how to answer that question because the seminary had very little interest in practical Judaism. It was a place where scholars worked. And so I don't know where the interest or the talent, if I have one, in preaching came from. But early I learned that preaching is, the two most important words in preaching are I and you. You means I'm talking to you about your concerns in your life. If I talk about world affairs, I always felt people weren't as interested. If I talked about what was going on in your life, I think he listened. And the other word was I talked out of my own personal experience and my own search and my own experiences. And I think that that drew and draws a response from people. So if I had to give any advice to preachers, it would be talk about where you come from and talk about where you think people are.
Reminds me, Rabbi Reamer, of Martin Buber, I and Thou. I and you, we're having a conversation between people who care about each other.
Right.
How does that resonate to you?
Very well, that's what I'm trying to say.
I want to fast forward to the present. You recently co-authored Duets on Psalms with Rabbi Eli Spitz. I'd like to ask you to talk about this book. What need were you trying to address with this book, and why now?
The Psalms has always been and still is one of the central books, not only of Judaism, but of human civilization. And all the emotions, love, wonder, anger, hatred, despair, joy at recovery, name a emotion, and you'll find it expressed beautifully and powerfully in the Psalms. The book was really the inspiration of Eli Spitz, who was a wonderful rabbi in California, and he wrote half the book, or maybe more, and what he tried to do was talk about what the Psalms originally meant in their own time and to those who wrote them. He wrote an accurate, scientific study of what the Psalms meant. And what I tried to do to supplement his work was to tell stories. As I say, I'm not a philosopher, I'm not a historian, I'm not a great scholar, I'm a storyteller. And I believe that somebody once said, well, a Jack Reamer sermon is a story illustrated by three stories. And I think that Elie Wiesel said, God loves stories, must love stories too. Otherwise, why would he have created the world? Was he short of aggravation? But if there was no world, there would be no stories. And if there were no stories, how lonely God would be. And so what I did was try to collect stories, including stories that happen in our own time, that illustrate the truth of the Psalms. So his is a scientific, accurate study of what the Psalms meant. And mine is using the same Psalms. We chose 10 or 12 of our favorite Psalms. Mine is a commentary telling stories about what the Psalms meant then and now.
Can we dive into some examples? Like, many people relate to the 23rd Psalm. In fact, your dear colleague, the late Rabbi Harold Kushner, wrote a whole book just about the 23rd Psalm. Rabbis often recite that Psalm at funerals. What do you have to teach about the 23rd Psalm in the book?
Well, let me tell you one of my favorite stories. I came home from work one day a couple of years ago. And if you don't believe the story, I don't blame you. It's an unbelievable story. I wouldn't have believed it either if it hadn't happened to me. I ate dinner and I was tired. So for relaxation, I put on the television. And I happened to turn on to a program called Jeopardy. Have you ever watched that program?
Of course.
It's divided in two halves. In the first half, you have questions. You get an answer, you get points. The second half is called Double Jeopardy, and the points are bigger. And you don't get chosen to speak on to be on that program unless you know a lot about a lot of things. And in the second half of the program, Double Jeopardy, the master of ceremonies asked what I thought was a giveaway question. He said, this section is on walking in literature. And we're going to deal with questions with books in which the word walking is mentioned. And the first question is, yea, though I walk through the valley. I thought everybody would know the answer to that question. Have you ever been to a Jewish funeral? You ever been to a Christian funeral? Have you ever seen somebody walk a loved one down to the operating room? You ever been to the movies? You've seen, you've heard, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I assumed everybody would know it. Much to my shock, nobody. These are three smart people. These are people who know a lot about a lot of things. None of them knew, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me, from the 23rd Psalm. And that's when I decided to agree to Elie Spitz's request and to write about the 23rd Psalm. Because if you'll forgive the pun, American culture is in jeopardy. If we have a generation in which supposedly smart people don't know that verse, which is an essential part of the King James translation of the Bible. How can you be an educated American and not know that verse? I thought of people like Anatole Sharansky, the great hero of Soviet Jewry. He wrote his autobiography. He called it, I Shall Not Fear. And he didn't put a footnote, this is a quotation from the 23rd Psalm. He assumed that anybody who picks up the book will know that it comes from the 23rd Psalm. And I thought of people like Abraham Lincoln, whose whole inaugural address, second inaugural address, is a commentary on one of the Psalms. He didn't put in footnotes. He assumed people would know, educated people would, even not so educated people, would know the 23rd Psalm. There's a story that John Adams tells. John Adams was one of the delegates to the committee that wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And he says that every so often they would get stuck on some issue they couldn't agree about. Somebody said, maybe we ought to calm ourselves down by saying a prayer. And Thomas Jefferson said, no way. We believe in the separation of church and state. I don't want no prayer here. And Ben Franklin said, I don't mind hearing a prayer, provided it comes from somebody who believes in the Union. So somebody, we don't know his name, gave a prayer, which he wrote a psalm. And everybody quieted down. And that's how the Constitution was created. And John Adams told that story in a letter he wrote to his wife. And that's how we know the story. And when I read that story, I was amazed. Here's a man living in Philadelphia, quoting a sermon that was written in the land of Israel, 6,000 miles away. Here's a man writing in 1778, quoting a psalm that was written more than 2,000 years before his time. Here's a man writing in English, a translation of a psalm that was written in Hebrew that he didn't know a word about. And yet it changed American history. And so the 23rd Psalm is very precious to me. And I think it ought to be very precious to every American Jew.
You mentioned earlier your preaching style and having in mind I and you and your relationship with the congregant, with the listener, and the verse you alluded to in Psalms, Lo ira ra ki ata imadi, I will not fear evil, for you are with me, you, God, are with me. There's the relationship between I and you, between me and God, and if we do it together, we can overcome the fear.
Right. The psalm starts out in third person. The Lord is my shepherd. But when it comes to this line, it says, you are with me, second person, because that's when he feels the presence of God.
We can overcome obstacles in life if we do it together.
Together.
What's another psalm that you commented on in this collection? You didn't write about every single psalm. It's a selection. So what's an additional favorite one that comes to mind?
Hard to choose. There's Psalm 44, which he shakes his fist at God, and he's very angry at God. And he says, you've abandoned me. Why? And you treat me cheaply. You sell me, sold me cheap. That always strikes me. There's a psalm like 30, which was probably written by a man who was sick and who recovered and who thanks God for his recovery. There's a psalm like Psalm 19, in which he declares the heavens are the glory of God, and the earth testifies to being made by God. It's hard to choose between them, because there are many which, even though they're several thousand years old, are still very precious. Let me tell you one story. Nathan Sharansky, one of the great heroes of the Jewish people, he had a lady friend who was the love of his life. Her name was Avital, thank you. And they both applied for visas to leave Russia and go to Israel. And the Soviet bureaucracy, they got answers on the same day. She got an answer that said, you can leave, but you have to go in 24 hours. He got an answer that said, you have committed treason by daring to ask to leave this wonderful country, and therefore you have to report to prison within 24 hours, and if you don't, your prison sentence will be tripled. So they had one night before they were going to be separated. What should they do? They decided to get married, but they didn't know any rabbi, and they're in very few rabbis in Russia who will do anything without government permission. They work for the government. But they ran to a phone booth, pulled out the page that said rabbis or synagogues, hailed a cab, and went from place to place to place till they finally found a rabbi who would marry them. The next morning, they said goodbye to each other. She was going to Israel, he was going to prison. And she gave him a present. I don't know if he gave her one or not. She gave him a book of Psalms in Russian and in Hebrew. And he put it in his pocket and went off to jail. And he said, I'll see you soon. He got into prison. They put him in solitary confinement. And he did three things. Number one, he was a great chess player. So he played chess against himself. But he had no chess board and he had no chess players. So he had to memorize the set and play both sides against each other. If any of you have ever played chess, you can understand how difficult that is to do. The second thing he did was once a day, the guard came into the cell to bring him some food. Whenever the guard came in, he would tell his favorite anti-Soviet jokes. Why? Because he knew that there was a camera on him at all times, and that if the guard laughed at an anti-Soviet joke, the camera would record it, and he would be in big trouble. The guard used to come in covering his face so he wouldn't laugh. That was the second thing he did. And the third thing he did alone in a prison is he studied the book of Psalms. And by means of the Russian, he learned Hebrew. And by he read the Psalms and studied the Psalms every day that he was in solitary confinement. And they kept him going. At one point, the guards tried to take it away from him. And he said, if you do, I'll go on a hunger strike. And they knew that the world knew about the Sharansky. They didn't want him to die in their one of their cells. So they gave him back the Psalms. And one day they took him out of the cell, took him by helicopter to Moscow, flew him from Moscow to Berlin, and took him out of the plane in Berlin. They were going to trade him for a Soviet spy. And across the bridge were a bunch of photographers and reporters and Avital. They said, you got to walk a straight line. So he walked zigzag on purpose to show that he was a free man. And he held up the book of Psalms. This is what kept me going. And when he arrived on the other side, he hugged Avital. And he said, hi, dear. Sorry, I'm late. I told you I'd see you soon. Sorry, I'm late. And then they put him in a plane in Berlin and they flew him to Tel Aviv. And when he landed in Tel Aviv, there was a crowd waiting to greet him. They put him in a car and they drove him from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And when he got to Jerusalem, they put him on their shoulders. And they carried him to the wall. And when he got to the wall, he held up the book of Psalms and he recited it in front of the wall. And that story and that picture was all over the newspapers, all over the world. There's a footnote to that story. I have a cousin in Israel. And one day she was standing in line at a cafeteria. And she looked around, and behind her in line was Natan Sharansky. In Israel, generals, diplomats, in the cafeteria, everybody stands in line. She said, it's an honor to meet you. And can I ask you a question? She said, I saw that picture. Was that real? Did that really happen? Do you really carry that book of Psalms with you everywhere? And he reached into his pocket. And he pulled out the book of Psalms and showed it to her. By now it was worn out, it was tattered, but it was the same book of Psalms. And he said, you don't understand, I didn't carry this book of Psalms. This book of Psalms carried me. I didn't carry this book of Psalms. This book of Psalms carried me. And I think that's the wonder of the book of Psalms. It has carried the Jewish people in good times and in bad times, in all good countries and in bad countries. And that's why it's a precious book. And that's why I tried my hand at telling some stories about it.
You mentioned earlier one of the Psalms in the collection, the 30th Psalm. A key verse is Be'erev Yalin Bechi, V'laboker Rina. In the evening, I cry tears, and in the morning, I sing songs. The idea being things may be rough now, but there's hope for a brighter future. We're in tenuous times. We're 15 months into the post-October 7th world in Israel as we record now. As we're recording, there are still some 100 hostages being held in Gaza who were abducted on October 7th, 2023, 15 months ago. War is still going on. And there just seems to be more unsettledness in the world, in America in particular, as well as in Israel and around the world, than I remember in my lifetime. I'm younger than you are. I was born in 1971, and I just don't recall feeling as unsettled as I do now. So looking at the Psalms and seeing a verse like the Be'erev Yalin Bechi V'laboker Rina, in the evening I cry tears and in the morning I sing. How can I believe that right now? And what are your sources of hope that guide you during uncertain times?
First of all, you're right. We live in a terribly, terribly dark time. And I pray for the hostages every day, and several times a day. And God willing, they should come home soon. What kind of a barbaric people kidnaps kids 6 months old, 3 years old, and holds them as political pawns to bargain with? We're dealing with an uncivilized opposition. And it's a very, very scary time. But let me tell you a story. That's how I answer most questions. I can tell you his name because he published the story. There's a rabbi not very far away named Paul Plotkin. And he tells this story. He was at the bottom of his life. He was getting divorced. And he was losing contact with his kids. And his congregation let him go because they felt if he couldn't handle his own family, how could he be an advisor to them on their family problems? Everything was going wrong. And he was traveling in Canada. And he was riding on a subway and he had both hands on the pole. And he didn't know it, but somebody reached into his arm, into his pocket, and took his passport and stole all his money. He said, "This is it. This is the bottom. What else could go wrong?" And he got up to daven the next morning, and he says to himself, "It's time to put up or shut up." For years, I've been telling people they should daven with sincerity and intensity. I got to do that now. And so he davened that morning as he never davened before. And when he came to that 30th Psalm, Be'erev Yalin Bechi V'laboker Rina, he said, that's it. That's how I got to live. Even when it's dark at night, I got to hope that there's going to be morning to daylight tomorrow. And he took a pen and he underlined those words so that every time he davened, he would find those words. And a few weeks later, he's driving in a car with a friend of his, and he tells his friend the story. Friend says, "That's funny. I was going through trouble, and the same thing happened to me. And I read a psalm, and it kept me going." And he said, "Really? What was the psalm that you read?" And he reached into the back of the car and pulled out his duffel bag or suitcase and pulled out his sitter and showed him. It was the same four words. So that's an example how the Psalms have the power to give hope and encouragement and faith in the future to people, even when they're at the bottom of their lives. Today, he's remarried, Rabbi Emeritus of a congregation in Broward, and a happy man. And so it came true for him.
That's a wonderful story. What plans, if any, do you and Rabbi Spitz have for a second edition and commenting on more of the Psalms?
People ask me that question, and I say, I'm an old man.
You're a spry 94.
94, 95.
Now you're 95 already.
Five.
Okay.
Going, the kids say going on 96.
Okay, well, you look 94.
Thank you. But I don't know if I still have another book in me. And I would be more than grateful if I can leave this book and the wisdom of the Psalms to a new generation.
As we prepare to draw this interview to a close, I'm wondering if you have any additional words, any additional message on your mind related to the Psalms or to your life in the rabbinate or all of the above or none of the above.
Just what I just said. That even in the darkest times, it is a sin to give up hope. And it is a blessing to live with the awareness that there's going to be a new day tomorrow and that we're not alone and that it's powerful to possible to start over again. My favorite line in the whole Bible is in the beginning, where Adam and Eve are away somewhere. I don't know where they were, maybe at PTA meeting, and their two sons fight, and one kills the other. And the one who kills becomes a hunted outlaw, runs away, and they never see them again. What would you do, God forbid? What would I do, God forbid, if we lost two sons at one stroke like that? The next line in the Bible says, and Adam made love to his wife again, and they gave birth to another son, and they called this son Seth, which means gift, because God has given him to us as a gift in place of Cain and Abel. They don't forget Cain and Abel. No parent who loses a child ever does, but they have another child. Anybody can begin to love and lose and begin over again. That's the real test of a human being. And that's what Adam and Eve do. And they become the role model for all of us to love, if necessary, to lose, and then to begin over again. That's my last word to myself and to all of you. Thank you for having me.
Rabbi Jack Reamer, it was an honor to have you on My Teacher podcast, especially because I am proud to call you my teacher.
Thank you. And I just had one word, which is if anybody wants this book, and I will autograph it at no extra charge, write to Ben, you can get it at Amazon, or write Google Ben Yehuda Press. And if you do Ben Yehuda Press, you'll find the address on Google. Ask Reb Google, and if you send the check to him, he will allow me to autograph it and send it to you. Thank you for having me.
I will put that in the show notes so that listeners can have a link to go to, and so just check out the show notes. Rabbi Jack Reamer, thank you for being on My Teacher podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I wish to thank my guest, Rabbi Jack Reamer, for joining me on My Teacher podcast. In the show notes, please find more information about Rabbi Reamer's biography and the book Duets on Psalms by Rabbis Jack Reamer and Ellie Spitz. Please help others find this show by rating and reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts or other podcast portals. please check out the other podcast I host, NeshamaCast, the podcast on Jewish spiritual care, produced by Neshama, Association of Jewish Chaplains. I am thankful for all of my teachers, especially my three children, without whom my teacher podcast would not have been possible. Theme music is written and performed by Sam Bernstein. Production assistant is Noam Bernstein. And internet art and graphic design are by Esther Bernstein. May the wisdom of your teachers guide you, and may you be a teacher to others. Thank you.